So, Hare Krishna, I know this session will be very lively, very dynamic. How are you all doing after yesterday's 64-round stay? Have you noted a change in your consciousness? Yes?
What change is it?
What has changed? It's a good question, isn't it? It's easier to concentrate now. Yes.
Raise your hand. Anyone like to say what has changed in their consciousness and how they feel this morning in that way? Different? Feeling blessed.
Devaki Nandan Prabhu. Yes. Improved the quality of chanting. Sundarananda. Yeah, oh, very nice point. It changed my priorities in life. Yes, Vrindavan Chanda. I'm a little bit more aware that Krishna in the name is non-different. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to hear the names now.
Mm-hmm. Any Matajis?
Okay. Oh, yes. Madhumati. You can see yourself doing this? Oh, yeah. Madhumati can, after this experience of chanting 64 rounds, she can see herself doing that again and again. Yeah. Not to say.
Kal. Okay.
You're getting afraid of your pure mind. Mm-hmm. Yes. Soft and sweet chanting this morning. Be wonderful. Yes, Maharaji. I didn't feel stressed about completing 16 rounds. It felt so natural and fulfilling even. Mm-hmm. Yes? Oh, that's a very nice technique. Our Maharaji offers us a good technique. One can actually go back to the power and the peace of that place, Te Kadamba, when one chants. So when the mind feels stressed, one can just revisit that experience again. That's a very nice, yes. I do that a lot when I'm in the West, in sometimes quite intense situations. I just go to a holy place in my mind and chant in that mental environment. Mm-hmm. Okay, Krishna Priya Prabhu. Only with the mercy of the Vaishnavas and the Lord it is possible for me to complete 64 rounds. Otherwise, it wouldn't be possible. Yeah, yeah. Yes? It intensifies love. Good. Wonderful. Our Matajis have other Matajis are there or... Maybe we come to a close now on this question which Bhujan Prabhu and myself had to you, and we will take care of the questions which you have here, the questions and answer pot. It's actually a question and answer pot. Would you like to start, Bhujan Prabhu?
Okay. First I'm going to put in some sugar to make sure all the questions are very sweet.
So now there are sweet questions.
And now I'll add my tea. I shouldn't get too carried away. Could you pick one for me?
Okay.
Thank you. Because Maharaj has a knack for picking very special questions. Hare Krishna, Dandavat Pranams. My question is, that as we discussed that we should associate with those devotees who have taste for chanting enthusiastically. Sometimes we don't get such an association in our temple. others' temple something has much higher enthusiasm for preaching and book distribution. So what can be done to get such a mood? Because the question is that if there is devotees who have taste for many wonderful devotional activities, but not specifically for chanting, how can we get the enthusiasm to chant if we don't have that kind of association? Obviously, one answer is come to Varsana and attend holy name retreats. But a second simple answer is there are so many, but the mixed blessing of the internet, because a mixed blessing means there's a blessing and a curse attached to it. So the internet is such a creation of Kali that has a blessing and a curse attached to it. So the blessing part is there are so many kirtans available. There are so many lectures about the holy name. There's so much association available for devotees in any part of the world can take the association of those who have a taste for chanting Krishna's names. Just by hearing the kirtans of those who have developed that taste, immediately one starts to sing also. And those kirtans will go on and on and on in our consciousness, in our heart, if we hear them. That would be my answer. Also, there are kirtan melas all over the world now. No lack.
Thank you very much, Purijan Prabhu. Here's the next question. Could you share your subjective impression? What part of long-term Krishna consciousness practitioners who have guru eventually reach at least some true taste of the Maha Mantra? Half, one-third, one-seventh. Why do you think the proportion is such? I think the proportion is 100%. Let me explain why I think like this. I hope you have all listened to the question. If not, you will not understand the question very, the answer very nicely, but you will for sure concentrate better on the next question. I will therefore, for pedagogical reasons, not repeat the questions so that you're... let me be a little bit softer. Which percent of chanters can actually reach at least some taste of the Maha Mantra? Is it half? Is it one-third? I believe it is eventually 100%. Because whatever advancement you make on the path of devotional service, you will continue in your next life at the stage which you have received. It will, in other words, never be lost. Whatever advancement you make in chanting the Maha Mantra, my dear devotees, is an eternal advancement. It is an eternal investment in your spiritual bank account, if you want to express it in New York Jewish banking terms. Whatever little advancement you can make in this is just staying with you. So eventually, after some time, after a few lives, everyone who stays on the path of chanting will go back home, back to Godhead. And everyone will in some ways stay on the path of chanting because that advancement goes with him in the next life. Please let us develop a wide and spiritual vision on spiritual life. What we are doing here is something very serious. It's not something which we do maybe for a few years or which is something fashionable. It is something eternal. It is therefore for everyone good. Now, what decides if someone moves ahead quickly or what decides if he moves away, moves ahead slowly? My dear devotees, it's only one factor which Haridas Thakur has said. It's the amount of Shraddha. If you have lots of faith, you will move quite quickly ahead. If you have little faith, then it's good to increase the faith so that you will also move ahead more fast. Wonderful question. Thank you very much.
Good. Because of your blessing, then everyone will obviously easily hear and remember the question that I'll now read.
Yeah.
What to do if we are in a kirtan where we don't like the style? For myself, I feel the most connection in Aindra Prabhu's kirtans and find it difficult to focus in slower kirtans or different style kirtans. Well, if you're listening on your MP3 player, just change the channel. And if you're in a kirtan, and we don't like the style, there are a few things we can do. One is listen to the holy names, because the name is separate from the style. So we should just focus on the name of Krishna rather than the specific melody. There is a description in Madhurya Kadambini of a lower stage of taste and a higher stage of taste, ruchi. The lower stage is dependent upon the music, and the higher stage is independent of the music. So we should also be humble and know that this isn't the highest stage of appreciation of the holy name that's dependent upon the particular melody and the particular rhythms, etc. And at that time, we should just really focus, thinking that Krishna is placed me in this situation out of his causeless mercy to elevate my understanding, and listen very carefully to the sound vibration of Krishna's holy names. Hare Krishna, that would be my answer.
Just because somebody is offended, does this mean you have caused offense? For example, people overreact and are unreasonable, so you just give up on trying to please them and satisfy them. It becomes so that your sneezing becomes offensive. it can become... Yeah, this is a very... I must confess to my audience that this is a question which I myself have, and I would like to turn to Burijan Prabhu. with this. The question really is, if someone feels offended, have you really offended them? Maybe they overreact and take offense even when you sneeze next to them. The reason why I want to ask Bhujan Prabhu the question is because there seems to be an indication in Bhakti Ratnakar that yes, you are an offender, even though you didn't mean to offend somebody, but he feels offended. It's Rupa Goswami was sitting and seeing a pastime of Krishna and laughing about what he saw funny Krishna do, and one Vaishnava came by who had a defect in his leg and thought Rupa Goswami was laughing about his leg. He didn't know, this Vaishnava, that Rupa Goswami was absorbed in Leela Smaranam and laughed about something which Krishna so cleverly and funnily, full of fun, did. And it is said in this work, Bhakti Ratnakar, that Rupa Goswami suffered from the fact that this devotee took offense and therefore could not continue with his bhajan undisturbed. Now my question, Bhujan Prabhu, is, I have heard this pastime and so on, but I don't know. I personally feel an offense is something when you mean something, when you have an intention to hurt. It's different from a mistake, or also different from if someone overreacts or projects his own mental situation into something. But from this Leela always has put a question mark to my understanding. Does something valuable come to your mind on this? Because it's really a question. I think when you feel that, my God, I'm doing an offense, as soon as someone feels offended, how can you move? You become almost, Krishna. Bhujan Prabhu is cooking, spicing the questions.
Yes, yeah.
They will be very ecstatic now.
Yeah. Rose-flavored questions. I think in the case of many complicated questions, if you look at it from this point of view, here's the answer. And if you look at it from this point of view, here's the answer. And if you look at it from this point of view, here's the answer. So I think there are many answers, and a wise person knows which answer to apply at which time. So I think it is a complicated question. My first answer would be, when you sneeze, you should cover your mouth very carefully because you're spreading germs around, and maybe the person doesn't want to get a cold. So I'm saying it, even though it's a funny type of an answer, but are we that sure that we are completely innocent when someone is insulted by how we've acted? And maybe we are. Maybe it's ignorance too, that we don't know any better. But a sensitive person can get insulted by an activity that we're not even aware of. So isn't it an offense? Obviously, the offense of something done unconsciously or in ignorance won't be as strong And disturbing is someone who's consciously, if someone's trying to consciously step on your toes and disturb you and push you out of the way. I've seen this in when, if you want to create a riot, just hold out a ghee lamp in Krishna Balaram Mandir, and then 50,000 people will come rushing and pushing everyone out of the way if nothing else exists except the ghee lamp. And but they do that very naturally out of a simplicity in the heart. And when Westerners get in the way of that, they get so disturbed. But the people are actually being very, very innocent in doing it. So, and then if you say, well, if they're going to be like that, I'm going to do the same thing. But I'll be doing it in a completely different mood than them, and I'm pushing them out of the way, and it's very painful for me, and it will actually disturb my consciousness if I imitate their simplicity of heart. So, one obvious point, and probably the point of that that pastime, is that we should be very careful in dealing with the devotees and be very respectful in dealing with them and careful not to insult or disturb devotees as we prosecute our own devotional service. And one third angle or answer to it is more or less what you said, is that if we can't become overly conscious of offending. Otherwise, we don't become Krishna conscious, we become offense conscious. And you can't even live, you can't even move, as you put it. So it's not the International Society for Avoidance of Offending, it's the International Society for Being Conscious of Krishna. So those are three different...
Please forgive me.
I feel so offended.
Krishna.
That's the best I can do.
It's your turn.
Wait a second. Now it's your turn.
Yeah.
No, I'll give you one and we'll combine the... I'll give you a, this one will be rose petals and sugar.
Haribol Pamho. Respected Maharaj, my...
One person once wrote to me, he said, Pam Ho is too formal. He said, Pam Hai.
Pam Hai. Yeah, we have very creative devotees. My question is that I feel so much... tears as soon as kirtan starts, and I pray. It's like uncontrollable, even for long hours, in 12-hour kirtan melas. Is it sentimentalism or some natural feelings? It even becomes very awkward in front of other devotees. What should I understand out of this? Please guide me. There is a verse in the Bhagavatam spoken by Maharaj Rishabhdev who said that a yogi or someone on the spiritual path will be always a little skeptical about his emotions and mind. And he gave an example. If a hunter has caught a bird and put the bird in a cage, he will always be very careful that the door is not open and the bird will escape. In the same way, the yogi should, when he has understood the need of mind control and sense control and also emotion control, he should not always trust his emotions 100%. This is a standard answer which you will hear from all of our ISKCON Swamis, I will now add another little rose petals to this. After having first established that our emotions at the new stage of spiritual life are sometimes going up and down, and there is a lot of sentimentalism, we make, for instance, I found out every, you know, after Janmashtami, the devotees have fasted the whole day and then ate a feast at 2 o'clock, and then in the morning, and then they get up for the Mangal Arati. They usually cry when they offer their Vyasa Puja offerings to Srila Prabhupada. And I found this out, and I always thought, are these tears real tears, or is it just psychologically explainable that they have starved and then they have eaten themselves up to the neck, so now they are a little emotionally unstable? So I made an experiment by changing the program and giving the devotees a chance to sleep longer on Vyasa Puja day. And I found out there were about 70% lesser tears because they slept longer. So you could see these tears were infused or were induced not by genuine spiritual understanding, but by lack of sleep and an overdose of sweets at 2 o'clock in the morning. That I have seen, and others have also seen, that often there are material causes for our tears in Krishna consciousness. However, listen very carefully. It is important that we bring our feelings to our spiritual practice, even though they may still be material and sentimental and all. Bring what you have to Krishna's holy name, and after some time it will become purified and you might develop pure feelings. So I have seen this with Srila Prabhupada. There was once a Mataji who always cried like you. Every kirtan she cried. She just, oops, saw the deities. She cried. And we older men were thinking, Prabhupada, look at this sentimental Mataji. And Prabhupada said, no, she brings her feelings to Krishna and eventually the feelings will be purified. So continue to cry. Don't make it into a public show so that others think you are at the level of bhava already. Most probably you are only approaching that level. You are not yet 100% there. It is good if one does not make a public demonstration of his emotions. Keep them for yourself as much as possible. And after some time, the auspicious hour may arrive where you can actually cry for Krishna. And that would be, these tears are the price of returning back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna.
Now you have to pick one for me, please. Oh, you're picking such a difficult one.
I'm trying to find the snake inside.
Oh, this question has 4 parts. Shall we think about our level in chanting? If yes, how to understand it? In other words, what should we, as I understand this question, is should we try to understand our level of chanting, and how should we understand it?
I suggest you only take one, because it's really full here.
Right? Yeah. Oh, okay, then I'll pick the 4th one. What to do if I'm afraid of surrendering to Krishna?
made a joke.
What to do if I am afraid of surrendering to Krishna? Well, there's the answer that Srila Prabhupada gives in the Bhagavad Gita in his purport to 1866 Savadamam Pratyaja Mame Kam Sharanam Vaja Ham Tam Sava Papabhyo Moksha Shami Na Masucha. So Prabhupada in the purport says Masucha means don't fear, don't hesitate, don't. Anyone know what the third word is? Don't worry. Just give yourself to Krishna. But that isn't such an easy thing. And a lot of the fear, in my understanding, of surrendering to Krishna comes from a fear of losing oneself and one's individuality. And that isn't exactly what surrender means. Surrender doesn't mean, as in the English word. Here's an example of surrender. I have a yes, surrender to me. But that's because there can be no love attached to that, certainly. But that's not what surrender actually means. The word is sharanagati, which means returning to our actual shelter, our natural shelter. So if we think of surrender as returning to our natural relationship with Krishna, which is returning home, back to home, back to Godhead, awakening our relationship with Krishna and depending upon Him instead of our own very limited abilities. If we don't surrender to Krishna, who will protect us? Well, I'm left to depending upon my own abilities to protect me if I don't have a developed relationship with Krishna. And my own abilities, however great they are, they're at the time of death, or in an extremely difficult situation, or when there's an earthquake. Being in an earthquake is such an amazing experience, because that which you naturally take for granted as your support, the very earth or the building you're in, you don't expect it. When you go into your room and close the door, this is a place of security. But when the earth you're standing on and the building you're in starts shaking back and forth, terror enters the heart. So that is like the time of death. Not only the time of death, but it's like the time of death. All the things that we commonly take shelter of to get us through life, our strength, our wealth, who we know, our beauty, our credit cards, we don't feel secure even if we walk out the door without our mobile phone and our credit cards. But at the time of death, how will those things protect us in any way, you know? So we want to find naturally a more secure, a fully secure asraya, not durasraya, an asraya, a secure shelter. So that is the purpose of our life, to develop such a relationship with Krishna that we can actually feel very secure putting ourselves in Krishna's hands. And it is very helpful in our life to see when something doesn't go our way, when there's a mishap, not even a catastrophe or a disaster, but even an inconvenience. Where does the mind go to take shelter? Does it take shelter of anger? What does it take shelter of? Just getting disturbed? So this is our, so when we see that that's just where my mind does take shelter of, these things that are no shelter at all, I have to become humble and say, Krishna, again I've failed the test. because I'm trying to learn to take shelter of you and to trust you, because you are the absolute truth. So depending upon our faith, we have different degrees of taking shelter of that, and life is meant to develop that faith. Take some risk for Krishna in Krishna's service. Go out and spend days distributing books, and your own abilities will run out, and then pray to Krishna to help you and see if he helps you. I remember you used to tell that story of how you had a Sankirtan party, and you were chanting Hare Krishna in Serbia or something, and the bombs started coming when you were in a, and everyone was under the stage or something like that, and you had everyone chant, and suddenly when everyone was chanting, everyone felt that they were in Krishna's hands. So we have to live our life in Krishna consciousness and develop our faith, and then it won't be something theoretical, but it'll be something that we have that's actually ours, a deeply spiritual experience. Anyway, that's how I would answer that question.
What is a devotional feeling? And is a devotional feeling different from a material feeling, and if yes, how is it different? A very nice question also. There actually, according to Rupa Goswami, he speaks about three devotional feelings. First feeling is, I want to be close to Krishna. And second feeling is, I want to give pleasure to Krishna. And the third feeling is close to Krishna, give pleasure to Krishna. Oops. And something else, which I don't want to speculate now. See, a devotional feeling is different from a material feeling by one simple standard. A material feeling always centers around you and your desires, and a devotional feeling centers around Krishna and Krishna's desire. So when you feel that you want to be close to Krishna, to give him pleasure, that is a devotional feeling because it is centered around giving Krishna pleasure. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami makes this little analysis in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he distinguishes the amorous feeling of the gopis from material lust. He says, love means to want to give pleasure to Krishna, and lust means to want to have pleasure for yourself. That's a very simple standard. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Three-part question. What is the name of the tailor whose name was Radha and who ran away from our husband?
Yeah. It was not a tailor, it was a barber. Barber, not a barber, but a, you know, how do we call these? Barber. Tika. So what his name was, I don't know. I really don't know. It's one of these stories which they tell in Varshana, and the point here is not the name of the, is the Radharani's mercy. Mm-hmm.
Since Krishna and his name are identical, How do the gopis feel separation from Krishna since they are always chanting his name? They're always chanting Krishna's name, so why do they feel separation from Krishna? This question brings up the topic of separation and why it is so important. When you are thinking about separation from Krishna and being the methodology taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we don't think that separation is the goal. We don't think that separation is the goal. We think being with Krishna is the goal. Because if we think that being with Krishna is the goal, then one can experience separation. But if you think separation is the goal, then you'll never experience separation. Because separation means the absence from the person that you wish to be with, the intense feeling of absence. So separation, which is the goal, is only experienced when meeting becomes the goal. Is that clear? Yes? So the gopis are chanting Krishna's names, and the great devotees are chanting Krishna's names, thinking, "Oh Krishna, oh Krishna, when will you show your mercy upon me? When will I see you just for one time? When can I be with you?" And that feeling of wanting to be with Krishna opens up a channel by which Krishna actually is present in the holy names. So this is very mysterious and not possible for the material mind to understand, but that is the best I can explain it.
When I chant just listening, I feel dry. And when I try to use some methods from the retreat, the mind makes things heavy. I don't feel Sambandha Gyan naturally, so I try to apply it in chanting, but I feel too mental. What is the balance between being mental and using the consensus or using the consciousness for deeper japa? My dear devotee, I have a very nice help which Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur offers. It's about the devotee is asking about feeling a connection with Krishna, and he or she says, whenever I try this, it's so strenuous for the mind to think myself into something. What really helps you to develop a relationship with Krishna is to just sit in front of the deities and chant. My dear devotees, this simple practice to just sit down before the deities, look at the deities and chant will help you very quickly to address with the Hare Krishna mantra Radha and Krishna. Somehow I had, when I was a young devotee, I had a tape of Srila Prabhupada, which was never actually published in the tape ministry. And I was very proud to be the only owner of this tape in ISKCON. It was, this tape had a meeting with Prabhupada. There are some distraught devotees, they are distressed. You can see they are really feel very sad and disturbed in their minds. And they come to Srila Prabhupada and they tell Srila Prabhupada that they feel so upset, they want to leave Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada now wants to help them and gives them an instruction. He says, you should go before the deities and chant there before the deities. And as far as I know, Prabhupada said this often in the early times to his young devotees who were still struggling with the mind and the senses very much. Going before the deities and chanting before them makes you immediately feel that there is a relationship without any mental strain, without any... you don't need to be very advanced and so on. You can do it immediately, and immediately a feeling of connection will come. Please try it. Don't listen to this theoretically. Try it. Or if that does not... If you have no deities where you live, maybe you live in your own house or apartment, get a good size photography of deities which you like and chant with them, and you will see so many good things in Krishna consciousness will come to you because the deities are alive. They hear you and they somehow send mercy from the spiritual level. Please do it. There is even an instruction where Prabhupada said that we should chant, listen to this, before a photo of the Sat Bhuja deity. You know Lord Chaitanya, who reveals himself as Rama and as Krishna and as Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And he said, no other process in Kali Yuga is necessary to attain perfection. Because the moment you chant before the deities or a picture of the deities, a relationship will automatically happen. Please try this. Everyone, please take a mental note of this and try it. You will see very, very first-class results in your Krishna consciousness. See, Krishna will watch you doing this and he will give you mercy. Hare Krishna.
Wonderful answer.
It is a wonderful point, really. It is so simple and so highly effective. Sat Bhuja form, because in the age of Kali, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared as the most merciful incarnation. And if you can develop your Shraddha in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then that he is Krishna himself, then you will have the right relationship. And in that form, you know, are you aware of the Sat Bhuja form? There's ants like this, there's an arrow and a bow, that is Lord Rama. Then, in the next story, right under, Krishna plays, it's the blue arms of Krishna, and then the form of Sat Bhuja is there with a Kamandalu and a Sanyas Danda. I worship this deity. I have actually it's now in the house of Bhagavad Dharma. It's a very beautiful deity I have. I might put him on the internet, then you can really see what is beauty. Krishna.
Should I?
Please.
Brijan Prabhu spoke about being alive and making something about ignorance and move for Oh, that's why. For some time I became immersed in the ignorant energy and now trying to get back to the feeling of connection to Krishna is difficult for me. So I feel hopeless with my japa. How do I get out of this type of mood, as well as there is absolutely no reciprocation with Krishna, which takes away my faith and I become dry? So as I understand this question, it's when one is feeling down in one's Krishna consciousness and even hopeless in one's Krishna consciousness, what to do to bring life what to do to become alive again. So the answer is association. We need the association of devotees. And we have to have association of devotees that are more alive than we are. Sarva shastra koi, lava matra sarasange sarva siddhi hoy. We need association. Association reflects into our hearts, just like a crystal. Our hearts are like a crystal. And whatever surrounds it, the crystal will take up those properties. So similarly, our hearts take up the property, our consciousness takes up the property of what surrounds us. So if we are down in our Krishna consciousness, we have to seek and immerse ourselves in good association. And if that's not available, we should just chant and chant and chant and chant and chant and chant and chant. Or if we can't do that, we should stand in front of the deities and just pray and pray and pray and pray and pray. And if we can't do that, we should read Srimad Bhagavatam and keep reading Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, or hear the classes and put on lectures of Prabhupada and Prabhupada's followers and servants, and just immerse our consciousness until some life comes to us. And or we should go to the holy Dham, Vrindavan, Sridham Mayapur, and there's so much spiritual activity. There's kirtan going on in Vrindavan akanda, continuously. And if we can't participate in the kirtan, we should just sit in the temple room and watch thousands and thousands of people file past, and they're participating in the kirtan, and they're going to the deities, and each one of them is praying to the deities in their own way. Somehow be in touch with life. A life, those who are in touch with Krishna consciousness. And if we can't do that, we can sweep the floor of the temple. And if we can't do that, you know, do something and pray to Krishna to help. That's how I would answer that question. But don't give up hope. Keep trying.
It's like unpacking a present. Hare Krishna. As I heard in the class, what should be the mood while chanting? First, chant with sense that God and His names are identical. Second, chant with feeling. Third, hear first Hare. Fourth, best to chant in serving mood. So, my question is, should I chant first four rounds with God and His names are identical mood, then next four rounds in serving mood, or a mix of everything? Thanks and regards. Hari Bol. You are a mathematical thinker. Hare Krishna. This is a new devotee. I can see why he has still a name which is an uninitiated name. See, when we are new in Krishna consciousness, everything looks quite mechanical and different. It's like when you learn typing, first you go A, S, D, F. Oh my God, I forgot. I knew how to type with 10 fingers, but when the computer was developed, I stopped using the skill because I didn't want to enter the computer world. But I was very fast in an ordinary typing machine. R, S, D, F, J, K, L, M. I forgot now. And when you type a letter, you go like, ah, Z, O, E, ah. And after some time, you go like very fluent. And type like this. So in the beginning, everything it sounds a little bit mechanical or so. When you chant, you want to come into a natural flow. And you try those things which help you and move on to other things which help you. So that is different. One day you are chanting maybe your first rounds in a very careful way. The second day you concentrate on, I'm a servant of Krishna. The third day you do this. You have to see what works at which time for you and then apply it like this. There is no hard and fast rule like this. Ultimately, you want to come to a level, this should be the goal, where you chant just very in a devotional mood, crying out for Krishna like a child cries for the mother. So whatever helps you reach this devotional mood, that you try, and whatever is an obstruction, that you should avoid. Hare Krishna. I hope it's clear. Is it clear? Would you like to try?
While doing kirtan, should the mood be a serving mood or a searching for Krishna mood? Thanks.
Hare Bol.
So, the material part of me wants to search for Krishna with myself as the center. And usually that part is desiring liberation, because certainly it's not desiring love for Krishna, because love, it means service. And that's the difference between love and lust. Love is centered on the pleasure of the beloved, on Krishna. And lust is centered in selfishness. So naturally, in the beginning, there's either the desire for liberation or some other material desire that's driving the engine of our search for Krishna. But Krishna will not fully reveal himself until the desire to search for him is completely the same as the desire to serve him. And this is the message of the Gopi Gita, the 31st chapter of the 10th canto, where Krishna hides from the gopis and in one sense, externally, superficially, they're suffering so much and it appears as if he's torturing them from just remaining out of their sight. And then they confront him with this. You're so what kind of a person are you? Are you a person who's like this, or like this, like this, like this? And Krishna replies, and he reveals his mind, his intentions, is that, and his intentions were, that when the gopis were searching for Krishna, even though Krishna had treated them some improperly by disappearing from them when they had given everything to him, what was in their heart was nothing other than saving him difficulty. What was in their heart was nothing other than the fear that as he was walking on the forest paths to avoid them, that his soft lotus feet would be discomforted or even hurt or pricked by the sharp grass or rocks that's there. What was on their mind was him and his welfare and his pleasure and trying to save him from discomfort. So they're searching for Krishna to serve Krishna due to their love for Krishna was so powerful, the intensity of their search, of their love and serving mood was so powerful that Krishna had, he was forced to come before them. And because Krishna explained this to them, that I wanted to see the world to hear the glories of your mood, of your loving mood, therefore I have performed this pastime of disappearing from you. So that the world could hear how Krishna is hear of the qualities of the consciousness, of the loving serving consciousness of the Braja Gopikas and follow the example of trying to search for Krishna for the purpose of serving him. So we should call out to Krishna, 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 please accept me, please accept me as your servant. Please allow me to serve you. Please allow me to serve you.
Thank you, thank you. Here comes the next question. Can you all still hear? All the devotees felt so inspired after the 64 rounds day. In my case, it was not that difficult to complete the rounds. And I did my best and tried to be concentrated, but I didn't feel moved at all. Is it due to my aparadas? Can it be that due to aparadas, we are even more away from Krishna than in the beginning of our spiritual path, although we sincerely try to make progress and please Krishna? This is a very difficult question. Yes, sometimes all the devotees have said of their spiritual life or spiritual way that they were in better Krishna consciousness when they joined than now when they are old. And they give the reason. Some aparadhas, offenses which have killed my enthusiastic spirit. I think that there is, at least in my case, there is certainly validity to this perception. When you are on the path of Krishna consciousness, you need to take care that you always keep one thing alive in your heart. See, philosophically, we are like sparks who have fallen out of the great fire, we have left Krishna, and our love and our Krishna consciousness is now left, and we are becoming spiritually a little bit dead. It's really like the spark of fire. When it comes out of the fire, after some time, it can become dead. But if it takes care that the fire is always alive, then it will not become dead. So in material life, although we are separated from Krishna, we must take care that always our eagerness, our hope, our enthusiasm for Krishna remains alive. And then we will naturally not make aparadas and everything will be easy. Now, I can really say this as someone who is now more than 40 years in the process. I have seen, if I now think, I know everything, I know how it works, let me have a peaceful old age sit in my room and be happy and eat good prasadam and so on, then I'm finished. This movement is not for this. It is actually not a movement for peace even in that graveyard term of the word. This is for becoming more and more eager and anxious in your spiritual life. Then you are alive. Then the spark has fire. If you don't become more eager and anxious as you become older in your spiritual life, what might happen is that you build up your little comfort zone and lose your life. But I don't think that your case here, as you wrote, you felt you could complete the rounds, but you had no feelings. See, when you do this the first time in Teya Kadamba or the second time, you work with some extraordinary circumstances. You're sitting out all day in the nature, and the air tends to take the humidity and the electrolytes from your body, and you become a little dull. Therefore, there are a few advices for those who want to do this the next time. It's good if you drink regularly. That's very important. Otherwise, your concentration will go down. You always have to watch that you have first-class shade, because when you sit in the sun after 10 o'clock, it takes your energy and it makes you feel spaced out. There are a few other little just technical rules which you can hear from those who live under trees and who can give you the advice. There are a few, it's a science to do, but we did not want to talk about it to not make things too complex and complicated and so on. I think those of us who became less focused after 12 o'clock it usually starts. Did you notice? 12 o'clock I looked at the group of devotees and it's always like this. They began to feel restlessness, some wandered off. You could see how the time of the day began to influence the minds of the devotees. That's why we broke and did a kirtan to just bring everything back to focus. So I think next time it will be better. And with this I want to really make a good announcement. I think you should take a yearly japa retreat. Why? Because in the japa retreat, ideal circumstances for chanting are created, as ideal as we can do at the present moment, having the present facilities. Our desire is to create better facilities for you and to help you even more in your own retreats, but we will speak about this a little later. For now, I just want to say that it's good to do this regularly, and then you will become accustomed to it and you will know what to do. Have you noticed yesterday, when you get up early and start your 64 rounds early, everything goes so easy? Have you noticed? If you don't, maybe some, I saw not all of you were doing it because you didn't know it. Next time, for instance, you can learn this. You can really make it a point. Even if I have to skip the last evening program before the 64 rounds day, I will, so that I can go early to bed. Now I will rise up by 4 o'clock and then get into it. And then you will fly high in the sky of Japa all the time. These are not due to aparadas. You're a good person that you came here. It's just, you are new in this, living under trees. you are newcomer to living under the tree. Hare Krishna.
Uh-oh, it's a book. No, it's two questions. This is for you.
You can then take your question, no?
I don't know if I can find it again.
No, why do you laugh? We want to hear from Burijan Prabhu. I will read this question. You please.
The task of becoming a pure devotee, such a consciousness is frightening for me. The something is too high, which makes me discouraged. How can I balance? The idea of loving Krishna when one feels very, very humble and being on such a high state, giving everything to Krishna and being fully surrendered to Krishna is very frightening, considering one's own state and unachievable. So what to do? How to balance that? To keep the enthusiasm along with the humble feeling that it is not possible for me. And the answer is similar to how I would also approach or add to what Maharaj said about the last question. It's called humility. Is that when we find a block in our devotional service, humility doesn't mean to think about it and think about, I'm so fallen, this is so great, and I'm so fallen, because that's just thinking about oneself. But I've read where Prabhupada says humility means to take shelter of Krishna. So putting oneself in a humble state of mind that this is so high and I am so low, look at my position, I've chanted 64 rounds and that wasn't difficult, and still my heart is as hard as a thunderbolt or a hard piece of wood. Oh Krishna, just see my condition. Please, I want to serve you, but I have no qualification to serve you. You are so great, I am so hard and fallen and tiny and insignificant. If we take a little bit of that mood of taking shelter of Krishna and have that, and allow that to, that negative, seeming negative, to generate something positive, and that's what humility is. It's the negative generating attracting the positive. So then a difficult circumstance or thinking that Krishna is so high and I am so fallen, we don't get discouraged, but we depend on and trust Krishna's mercy. And immediately, from my own experience, when we are honest and introspective and see our own fallen condition, whether it's because of one reason or another, and still we feel far from Krishna, if we take that to Krishna in an honest way, then Krishna's reciprocation is instantaneous. And immediately, we are feeling something. Immediately, we are feeling something. We're feeling, I'm so fallen. I've been chanting. I'm so and I don't feel anything. Oh, Krishna, who needs your mercy more than me? So that's the balance that comes with humility. Don't get discouraged. Turn to Krishna in a humble state of mind.
Yeah. Thank you. We are almost approaching the end. It's now 15 minutes to 10. Then we will have a little... I think we will make a little pause. We will just chant for 5 minutes and devotees can utilize the restrooms. That's a polite word. And bathrooms or toilets is the word. Then we will do our last session. Here is a question from a devotee in Moscow, but I will not say who it is. He has two questions, but I will only answer one. What does it mean to sing from the heart? Is it a kind of internal force which can be compared with a strong, impulsive concentration of the mind on the object of meditation? Like when... to myself in mind, when I try to say the Maha Mantra to myself, what is the difference between this concentration by repeating in the mind and repeat it aloud? Thank you for these wonderful retreats. When we say sing from your heart, we have in mind that there are three hearts in all of us. We don't have one heart. You might now become very surprised that your anatomical studies in biology were wrong. If you thought you have one heart, then this is not true. The first heart is the mechanical pump, that red organ which contracts and expands. Boom, 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 boom. The second heart is the mind, the seat of emotions and thinking. And the third heart, that is the heart which we are very interested in Krishna consciousness, is the spiritual or devotional heart, the residence of the soul. It has a soul quality. And when we say sing from the heart or chant from the heart, we mean chant from the position of the soul. That is, I have left you, my Lord, and I have spent so many long years in this material world. Now I really want to turn to you again. Please accept me. That would be something which is offered, a prayer which is offered from the soul level, or the level of the heart. And it is here when Krishna hears you. There was once a devotee in Vrindavan. His name was Lala Babu, Lala first. And he had been very rich in his life before he became a devotee. But he had renounced everything and came to Vrindavan to live the life of a simple hermit. So he went to one of the famous saints of Vrindavan and asked him for mantra diksha. But the saint said, you are not yet ready. I will come to you when you are ready. That is, when you are actually chanting from the heart. Don't come to me, I will come to you when you are ready. So this was an answer. Lala Babu did not really know what it meant. But as the years went by, he became more... He understood what his future guru demanded of him, what qualification he wanted to see. See, in his previous life, means before Krishna consciousness, he had been a rich land owner, and he had some political problems with another very rich and influential man. So he still, when he came to Krishna consciousness, retained that hard feeling against this man whose name was Seth. So one day, this Lal Lal understood, I'm so much still in my world or my previous world because I still hate this rich man who was a competitor to me. I must change something. So what he did is he early one morning he went to the house of the rich man to beg his daily meal from him. When the rich man saw Lal standing in the crowd of other beggars, he immediately asked his servants to bring Lal. And then when he heard that Lal was hungry and wanted to just have something to eat, he prepared a plate with jewels, the rich man, and gave that plate of jewels to Lal and said, I'm giving you what must be given to a king, because today you are victorious over your false ego. Today you have conquered your ego. Today you have come to your devotional heart. So when Lal left the rich man, he saw before at the door his own guru standing, saying, now I can give you initiation, because now and only now you are able to chant from the heart. You have given up the world of I and mine. You have become very, very humble. I think chanting from the heart means to arrive at that place where you don't any longer identify with your false ego, but where you have become genuinely humble. Then you can chant from the heart, and your chanting has that quality which will attract Krishna and the and his dear devotees. A genuine humble mood where you are just becoming free from that terrible false ego. A genuine humble mood where you put your independent spirit before the lotus feet of Guru and Krishna is the best qualification to chant. And when you do this, then you become a great devotee. Lal later installed a deity of Krishna, and he was so advanced, this Lal, that when he had installed the deity, he wanted to see if Krishna is really there. The installation ceremony took place in the month of December, where it is quite cold in Braj. So in order to see if Krishna is really there, Lal got a little cup of ghee and put the cup on the head of Krishna. And then when by the heat of the head, the ghee and the cup was melting, he knew Krishna is inside the deity. He is there. He has melted the ghee. There is a temple in Vrindavan which happens to be one of my favorite temples. It's also an architectural masterpiece. It really stimulates our artistic sense. It's the temple of Lal Babu, the man who chanted from his heart because he was able to give up that false ego which contracts the heart and makes it hard and materialistic. I wish you a lot of success in developing your spiritual heart. This will happen as you continue to chant. So we will have now the last question for this question and answer session. We will give this question to Buri Jampabu. Please.
No. You please take it for me. No. Please.
Maybe we both.
So we'll end up with two.
No, but I thought we both can speak about it.
Okay.
Hopefully it's a good question.
You speak first.
I heard that if there is Pratibimba Shraddha Abhas planted in the heart, then it cannot be removed by Chaya Shraddha Abhas, but needs to be removed separately. So how do we weed out this Pratibimba from our heart? And how do we help others to do it? What is the difference between between anattas and Pratibimba? The question is very good. I'm not saying, my God, because of that. Prabhu, let me give you just a one-minute answer, because you are learned. If I have to explain now the different what is reflected and what is shadow chanting, and then I will lose half of my audience because they are a little tired. But what it means is the Pratibimba is very dangerous because you get things wrong. The Chaya Shraddha and the Chaya is not so dangerous because you are already close to the substance. So when you have Pratibimba, a wrong understanding, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the Mayavadis have this Pratibimba Abhas, Shraddha Abhas chanting, then you need to start all over. You have to start with the correct Sambandha and you have to do this. I don't think you have Pratibimba because you have gotten the right Sambandha Gyan. But if there is someone who has Pratibimba, you have to start the school all over with him. So let me pick another one, because through the years, my chanting became slower, more than 50 minutes around. But this seems, I know this handwriting, it was coming to me in America. And in my file, I know the person already, yes. And I know it is recommended to chant about half that time per round. Is there a way you suggest that I can practically learn to chant faster while maintaining clear pronunciation? And is it at all essential to learn to chant faster? My dear devotee, 6 to 7 minutes is the normal time of someone who chants around. And if you take so much long time, I believe it is because of physical exhaustion. You need to take care of your body and get some good rasayanas so that you don't... when you chant concentrated rounds, which is possible when you are healthy and your mind is focused, then it will take 6 to 7 or 5, or sometimes 5, but when it goes faster than 5, there's a chance that you miss some syllables and so on. So my tip is get healthy. Do something. I know a good Ayurvedic clinic. I can tell you privately. Yes, it is good not to chant fast to get it over with quick. No, that's not the idea. You have to chant because you want to enter a flow where you're really with the name Krishna, Krishna, and nothing else. No mood in between, no sadness in between, no melancholy in between, no mental plane in between, just the name. And you want to pull yourself out of everything else, especially your Western moods, which are the mental climate in which you swim most of the time. So, yes, try to... What will help you to come to the right time, but don't do this all the time. Have a little clock there and just compare, and when, and just before every round which you chant, say, I would wish to come to 8 minutes, something like 8 or 10 minutes. And then as you bring these things into your subconscious mind, the mind will help you to do that. Yes, it is essential to chant in a flow, and when you are too slow, mostly you are not in a flow, so you should try to come in the flow. You can take 10 minutes, but 15 minutes is really the grandmother chanting speed.
The grandmother who has in the ICU.
In the ICU, yeah. It's really a little bit too... You are still young, you can... relatively young, you can chant longer. And it works with the clock. You can't believe, my dear devotees, how much your mental conditioning, means your material psychology, influences everything which you do. And those who are slow chanters are usually not surrendering to the chanting process. They stay in their minds and they go very, very slow. Hare Krishna. I'm your servant. Just get a clock and just say to your mind, I want to chant quicker. And it will be easily done. It will be easily done. You can motivate yourself, but then take the clock away. The clock doesn't belong to your altar. You know, just it's just a help to get you going. Hare Krishna. Do you want to say something, Burijan Prabhu?
Because you know the person, so it's probably better that I don't add anything to what you said.
I speculate.
I happen to know handwriting analysis. I could tell you. I think you have the right person.
Yeah, good.
So let me just pick one more.
Yes, please.
And then
do
this
so.
Will end it in this
please
way.
Do so.
Without even any squeezing around, we've gotten one, and there it is. And it happens to be a very short one. What are some symptoms of increasing faith?
Very good.
Yeah, and also, eloquence is truth spoken concisely. So faith, increasing faith means advancement in Krishna consciousness. Because we know that according to Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Ado Srada, Tata Sadhu Sange, there are different stages of Krishna consciousness. But it's not, and faith is the first stage, Ado Shraddha. It's the first stage. But it's not that at some point we graduate from the first stage and we go on to the second stage and we leave the first stage behind. We never leave the stage of faith behind. So increasing faith actually means advancement in Krishna consciousness. But the faith, which is the seed of bhakti, it takes on additional qualities. So when one has increasing faith, one's advancement is increasing, and also it will have further qualities. Like then I have enough faith to start associating with devotees, and I have enough faith to follow the process. And then I have so much faith, and my advancement has come more that I become fixed. And nothing can move me this way or that way from my determination to surrender Krishna, to Krishna. And that stage of faith is called nishtha. And then when one faith increases, Increases means developed. It means a blossoming. When one's faith blossoms still further, then one's taste in the holy name increases. And then, because one's taste increases, naturally, one's attachment to Krishna and the holy name and all of Krishna consciousness increases. And then as one attachment increases to the level of, and we can just imagine, so to speak, what this level is like. When one's attachment to Krishna is increased to the point that we can't live a second without Krishna, and we're chanting in that mood, Krishna, Krishna, I need you so much, and yet I don't have your shelter completely. I want to serve you, but I don't. The attachment. So how much faith do you have? I don't care about anything else except I want to serve you in a specific way. Oh, Krishna, and the chanting. And that all is infused into the quality of the chant. And then by Krishna's mercy, then one gets the shelter of the internal energy, and that stage is called bhava.
Wonderful.
And then it still increases. Bhava is called premankura. It's just the seed of prema. And the topmost faithful persons are the prema bhaktas. Because they have so much faith, they only care about Krishna. We hear about the Braja Gopikas. They only care about Krishna's welfare. And there's no little voices inside of them saying, if I surrender to Krishna, who's going to take care of me? Because that means their faith is just so fully developed that they love Krishna so much that there's no question who's going to take care of me. It's not even a consideration. Their mind doesn't even go in that way. They're so overwhelmed by love. But we can see how faith is such an integral part of it. Because faith is that from which one's bhakti grows. So what are some of the symptoms of increasing faith? So that is my comment on that.
Thank you very much, Purijan Prabhu. We are good in time now. I would say we have a little pause of not more than 10 minutes.
Till what time?
15 past 10. Now, on my wristwatch, it says 5 minutes past 10. I hope this is agreeable. And 10 minutes, yes? But please come back in time, because we are now, we must move a little concentrated. It's a wonderful last session. It will be very useful. See you very soon. Haribo.